WMMC HD3 Detroit, KMPS HD3 Seattle, WBMX HD3 Boston,
and on AOL Radio
and Yahoo Launchcast.
I thought I saw a man brought to life. He was warm, he came around like he was dignified. He showed me what it was to cry. Well, you couldn't be that man I adored. You don't seem to know, seem to care what your heart is for. Well, I don't know him anymore. There's nothing where he used to lie. The conversation has run dry. That's what's going on. Nothing's fine, I'm torn. I'm all out of faith. This is how I feel. I'm cold and I am shamed. Lying naked on the floor. Something real. I'm wide awake and I can see the perfect sky is torn. You're a little late. I'm already torn. So I guess the fortune teller's right. Should have seen just what was there and not some holy light. Beneath my veins, and now I don't care. I have no luck. I don't miss it all that much. There's just so many things that I can't touch on.
Radio's The New Sky. The Sky.
We're back. This is Hot Leads and Cold Cases with Nancy Duterte. Call Nancy Duterte now.
248-545-7685.
And we're live. Hot Leads, Cold Cases here at The Sky, New Horizons, No Boundaries, and the Para-X Network. Off to a little bit of a late start, but hey, we've got a great show lined up for you tonight. Give us a call, 248-545-7685. Again, 248-545-SOUL. You can also send instant feedback with your question or comment. That's at newskyradio.com. And of course, the Para-X chat room is another great way to give us some feedback during the show. Now, each week here on the show, we bring you a new and fascinating guest. This week, of course, is no exception. So we'll find out who's on the show tonight and what's in store. We'll send it over to your host, Nancy Duterte.
All right. Thank you very much, Brandon. Welcome, everyone. I have a feeling that it must be in the air, but everything seems frazzled. Electronics seem to be burning out. Everybody is running around. So hopefully tonight is just going to be a nice evening. Get to relax. Just listen to some really interesting information. So my guest tonight has actually been one of the lone voices going all the way back to 1958, and he began sounding the alarm about the government's cover-up of one of the world's most mysterious and potentially life-changing phenomena, the fact that we're being visited by spacecraft and alien beings from other worlds. My guest has called this half-century-long cover-up our cosmic Watergate. Given his background as a nuclear physicist and involvement in numerous classified advanced programs to develop nuclear aircraft, fission and fusion rockets, and research of compact nuclear power plants for space and terrestrial applications, my guest tonight, Stanton Friedman, is not a man to engage in fantasy or whimsical thinking. He is perfectly suited to investigate the technical capabilities of UFO spacecraft. He's hardworking, pragmatic, and focused on the facts. He's used these skills over the last 40 years or so to investigate this notoriously difficult and secretive field of UFOs. Stan received his BS and MS, or, you know, it's with the science, so they're science degrees, in physics from the University of Chicago, where he was ironically a classmate of the late astronomer and UFO debunker Carl Sagan. Stan worked for 14 years as a nuclear physicist for all kinds of illustrious companies, you know, McDonnell Douglas, Aerojet General Nucleonics, GE, GM. I'm not going to go into all of them, but he's got quite a background. Since his obsession with UFOs began, he's lectured to, I believe, more than 600 colleges and 100 professional groups in all 50 states, 19 other countries, including Canada, where he now resides. He's become pretty much a fixture on radio and television shows. He's provided testimony on UFOs to congressional and UN hearings. He was notoriously the first civilian investigator of the famed Roswell UFO crash in New Mexico, 1947, and discovered data that had not been revealed up until that time. He also worked with Benny and Barney Hill on their UFO abduction case in New Hampshire. He's written a couple of books with Betty's niece, Kathleen Marden. He has written a book called Top Secret Magic, about the alleged conspiracy of a group created under the Eisenhower administration known as MJ-12 or Majestic 12, supposedly to suppress UFO information. And he's also written a book called Flying Saucers and Science, which he addresses almost every single question you could possibly ask about UFO phenomena. So it's my great pleasure to welcome you to the show, Stan.
I'm delighted to be here. Sorry I fouled up on the electronics, but I'm having troubles.
Oh, no, let me tell you something. My internet went out the entire day, and it rarely does. It went out, my phones went out, everything, and then they sort of mysteriously came back. So I am not the only person that happened to today, so I think it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and we're supposed to have ice storms here tonight. That won't help anyway.
No, that won't help. But we're getting everybody relaxed because you're going to tell them about what you know about UFOs, which in my few conversations with you, I know that you have quite an extensive background in this field. I got to ask you, of course, and I'm sure everybody does, but was your interest triggered by a personal experience, or have you had one?
No, I haven't had one. The closest I came was when Kathleen Marden and I were being interviewed by a television reporter in New Hampshire on a dark country road, no lighting around, and we were standing up on a hill and a guy's down on the road. This is similar to the area where Betty and Barney were abducted. And suddenly, the guy at the camera says, "Hey, what's that behind you?" This never happened. You've been interviewed. You know what I mean. You don't expect that. So we turn around and look up, and a bunch of trees and all this stuff, and there's some lights. And there's one over here, then a little over to the right, there's another one, and there's another one, and another one, and I don't know what the heck we were watching, but they filmed us talking about that. Get back to the hotel, and two people there had seen things. They drew them. I asked them to draw what they saw, and it was just like what we had seen. And eventually we believe that it was the Vermont National Guard dropping flares, you know, flares to illuminate battlefields. I don't mean at the back of a car that's had a problem on the road. But that's as close as I've come, and that's not close at all. On the other hand, I check all my audiences when I get the chance to at the end of my lectures, and typically 10% believe they've seen one, but 90% didn't report what they saw because of fear of ridicule. And so I know from my lectures all over the world that people are interested, that people see things, that they're believers, but the laughter curtain has colored their willingness to talk about what's happened. So I'm One of my goals in life is to lift the laughter curtain. And I feel pleased. I certainly have detected an attitude that's a little different today than it was 20 years ago. My first lecture was 1967, so I've been at this a long time. And I think there is a change, partly because of Kepler, but the notion that we're alone is kind of going by the wayside. I mean, there are still some fundamentalist preachers who are saying all the intelligent life in the universe is here on planet Earth, which was created only 4004 B.C. I respectfully disagree with that. They left out six zeros, about 4 billion for B.C., you know. But what I've found is that, you know, it doesn't take personal experience. I never saw a neutron or a gamma ray, and I checked them, kept looking for them for 14 years when I was in industry. And incidentally, I think I set a record for working on more canceled government-sponsored research and development programs than anybody. It's not that I can't keep a job, but when they cancel the program, there ain't no job, man.
Well, it's interesting. Kinda weird. People have an ability to believe in other stuff, like neutrinos or other things like that, that they certainly have never seen. And they don't seem right to have a problem with that. And so what's the problem with this? Is it that it would be so obvious and so large, assuming it were true, that, of course you would have to have seen one?
Well, I'm not a psychiatrist. But I certainly have found that there is a small group of very nasty, noisy, negativist debunkers, fossilized physicists, ancient academics, that's when I'm feeling good about them, who can't wrap their minds around a couple of things. One, if you're going to have a scientific opinion, it should be based on facts, on data, on information. And there's two major problems for the noisy negativists. One, arrogance. And one, ignorance. I check my audiences. I talk about five large-scale scientific studies, describe the data, show them slides, so forth. And then I ask, how many people here read it? I'm lucky if it's 2%. And so I know they're not familiar with the data. The notion that you can express an opinion, it's impossible, or there can't possibly be. Or if it were true, I would know about it. How do you like that one? That's arrogance. And I get people who don't understand three important elements of the UFO story. One is ignorance. I'm sorry, my computer was just talking to me. One is the government cover-up, the cosmic Watergate, as I call it. They don't understand how security works. I get crazy answers. Like, the reason we know that governments can't keep secrets is how much we know about President Clinton's genitalia. That came from a world-class astronomer. What's it got to do with national security? Nothing. Dr. Seth Shostak of the SETI Institute, silly effort to investigate. That's what S-E-T-I stands for, really.
Oh, you're bad.
What?
I said you're bad. You're bad. My audience may not know what it is, and I should know this, too. It's the scientific... Hold on.
For extraterrestrial intelligence. I'm
Thank
sorry.
You.
That's what it's supposed to be. I'm saying it's silly effort to investigate.
I get it.
Same initials, just the last word is different. Well, several words are different.
I'm going to interrupt you right there, just because we got to take a quick break. So.
Okay.
Hold the thought. Everybody, stay with us. You're listening to Hot Leads Cold Cases. My guest tonight is Stanton Friedman.
At Talent, our family treasure, we create dolls, jewelry, eggs, and decorations. We believe in beauty and kindness beyond measure. At Talent, our family treasure. Shop at talentoft.com or find us on amazon.com. At Talent, our family treasure.
Like your last day, drink like it's water, there's no tomorrow.
CBS Radio's The New Sky, New Horizons, No Boundaries.
Back to Hot Leads and Cold Cases with Nancy Duterte. Nancy Duterte now.
248-545-SOUL.
And we're back here at the New Sky Network and the Para X Network, Hot Leads Cold Cases, with your host, Nancy Duterte. Now, make sure you find her away from the show, theskepticalpsychic.com. We're joined tonight by our guest, Stanton Friedman. Any questions or comments, 248-545-7685. Instant feedback at newskyradio.com. And, of course, you have the Para X chat room for a question or comment as well. Send things right back over to Nancy and Stanton.
Okay, great. Well, I did sort of interrupt you a little bit, and you were talking about some of the skeptics and debunkers, and you've been actually, I think, fearless in going toe-to-toe in a lot of debates with some of the best and most articulate UFO skeptics in various different forums. These have included astronomer Carl Sagan, astronomer Seth Shostak, who we were talking about from the SETI Institute, the late Philip Klass, who was an aeronautics engineer, Skeptic Magazine, Michael Shermer, and those are just to name a few. And according to you, you've apparently won almost all these debates by pretty large margins. And I want to ask you, first of all, I mean, do you consider these to be fair fights? Whenever you get involved in a debate about something that can be almost as esoteric as UFOs, you have different skills and different levels of expertise in which to debate these things. You're coming from it from the angle of a nuclear physicist. They're coming at it from all these other different angles, astronomers, engineers, English majors. What works?
Well, what works with all of these people, the kicker is that they don't know anything about the subject. They're arrogant enough to think they don't need to do their homework. Michael Shermer started, I got 80% of the vote with him. He started by saying, you know what this is all about is the residue effect and all these strange things, telepathy and ghosts and UFOs. There's a residue of 5% of the cases that really don't have enough data to explain. That's all we're dealing with here is residue. Well, that gave me a huge hole to drive a big truck through. I pointed out real quick-like that, Michael, what you just said isn't true. The largest study ever done for the United States Air Force, Project Blue Book Special Report 14, found that 21.5% of 3,201 sightings could not be explained. The better the quality of the sighting, the more likely to be unexplainable. The probability that the unknowns were just missed knowns was less than 1%. And I went on, the University of Colorado studied 30%. Of the 117 cases studied in detail could not be identified according to a special UFO subgroup of the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, and named three other sources. But by the time I was finished with that, and I talked fast so he couldn't interrupt me to say, but, and it was downhill for him from there. And so when you get the debunkers making stupid statements like they're never seen on radar, how come they're only seen in the United States, both of those are totally false. How come they're only seen by country hicks, which is totally false? And there are a number of these proclamations, not derived from study of evidence, but from bias and prejudice and arrogance and ignorance. And so it's easy to deal with people like that because they haven't done their homework. The same goes for this whole question of can you get here from the stars? Of course not. Violates the laws of physics. How many times have I heard that? Can't go faster than the speed of light. Well, okay, nearest star is 4.3 light years, but that doesn't mean you can't get there. The kicker is I worked on far-out propulsion systems, and every astronomer knows, although he doesn't admit it, I guess, that the major source of energy in the universe is nuclear fusion. That's what goes on in all the stars, not just some of them, not just the sun over there, but all the stars in our galaxy and all the other galaxies. Fusion produces an enormous amount of energy per unit mass of material. And the United States government, in its wisdom, went after fusion. they had fission for atomic bombs, and they went out for H-bombs. Now, let me give you a quick sequence. In World War II, 1944, a big bomb, lots of energy, was a 10-ton blockbuster. That means it released the energy of 10 tons of dynamite. Made a big hole in the ground, too. We used a lot of them. That was in 44. 45, first atomic bomb, and I'm going to be taking tours through Trinity site coming up. It's on my website, www.stantonfriedman.com. That first atomic bomb was like 18,000 tons of TNT energy release. Big jump over 10. 1952, our first H-bomb was 10 million tons. 10 million tons of TNT energy release. And the Russians outdid us with one that was 57 million tons of TNT energy release. Now, all the astronomers know that fusion is the name of the game, but they think we're going to use chemical rockets to get to the stars. How ridiculous. I mean, I could say the best way to get around the planet, we'll follow the lead. The guy who set the record was Magellan. 3 years to go around the planet Earth. The space station does it in 90 minutes. Progress comes from doing things differently in an unpredictable way. Space travel is complicated. An astronomer back in 1941 proved that the initial launch weight of a rocket able to get a man to the moon and back would be a million tons. The Apollo Saturn V rocket weighed 3,000 tons. He made every possible wrong assumption because he didn't know anything about the subject. And that's what we come here, I get to hear all the times about the impossibility. I mean, some people want to forget that there's another part of what Einstein said. If you get close to the speed of light, time slows down for the things moving that fast. You go out, come back, marry your granddaughter's best friend. You know, it's a gift of immortality. That may sound silly, but it isn't silly. And we have to take this into account, the big accelerator over in CERN. Time slows down for the particles moving that fast because they move at 99.9999% of the speed of light. That's not an unknown area, in other words. And so if you don't make stupid assumptions, if you look at it like an aerospace engineer, trips to the stars are feasible. It costs a ton of money. All of these projects cost lots and lots of money. The atomic bomb program, billions. A lot of people don't know. We built the plant to separate uranium isotopes. It was a mile long, a gaseous diffusion plant. And it used 5% of the electrical power in the United States. That's why it was in Tennessee, because they produced lots of power. It was done in secret. When I was working on nuclear airplanes, way back in 1958, when I was a wee broth of a lad, you know, that year, General Electric spent $100 million on that program. Employed 3,500 people, 1,100 of whom were engineers and scientists. We're not talking about six professors and 20 grad students. Some people who've complained about Roswell, I'm the original civilian investigator in Roswell, and said, Stan, if that really happened, they'd have had to pull half the physicists in the country out of the colleges. I said, you've got to be kidding. Are you really not aware of Los Alamos and Sandia and Oak Ridge and Hanford? I mean, these places employ thousands of people, and they have security clearances.
Well,
you need to go to academia.
That brings me up to my next question, which is really, I mean, if I think, and you've made the point that astronomers are really not in the best position to be discussing UFO propulsion systems.
Right.
Okay. And I think another thing that comes up pretty frequently in any discussion of UFOs is also, you know, the aspect of the political military cover-up. And once you get into that, then you have to have some working knowledge of what's classified.
Security,
yeah. And so I'm assuming that a lot of these people who you debate don't have any idea. Is that true?
That's right. That's certainly true. And they'll tell you that governments can't keep secrets for all kinds of silly reasons. Like how badly FEMA handled Katrina, which is absurd. And I get people who say, well, I worked in Washington. If this were true, I would know about it. David Susskind on his television program, and between takes, I did a program way back when. He said, look, I read the New York Times. Nothing there that says these things are real. So the Susskind syndrome, it's very important to me to keep track of what's going on in the world that's important. And if aliens were visiting, that would be important. But if it were important, I would know about it, and I don't. So it must not be true. I read the New York Times. There's nothing in there that convinces me. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm not going to look at any data after all. If it were true, I would know about it already. There's an arrogance there that is truly incredible. And keeping secrets is complicated, too. I get people who tell me, I talk a lot about the Majestic 12 group, set up by President Truman, incidentally, to deal with UFOs and Roswell and so forth. And people say, well, all those guys would have told their wives. No, they wouldn't. Nobody has a high-level security clearance, tells his wife anything classified. It's ridiculous. It's not only is it against the rule, but it's potentially dangerous. Loose lips sink ships is true. They think that it would be, I've had people tell me if Roswell happened, there would have been an article in the Physical Review, a journal for us physicists. Again, nonsense. First nuclear chain reaction on the squash court at the University of Chicago, 1942. There was no article in a journal. It was top secret plus.
And I think
there are many other things that are, you know, so they don't understand.
Well, I think when that goes to the issue of, well, why wouldn't anybody be talking about it? Before we talk about that, though, we got to take another break. So Okay. Stay with us. Everybody, you're listening to Hot Leads Cold Cases. My guest tonight is Stanton Friedman.
At Talent, our family treasure, we create dolls, jewelry, eggs, and decorations. We believe in beauty and kindness beyond measure. At Talent, our family treasure. Shop at talentoft.com. Or find us on Amazon.com at Talent, our family treasure.
MBS Radio's The New Sky. The Sky.
We're back. This is Hot Leads and Cold Cases with Nancy Duterte. Call Nancy Duterte now.
248-545-7685.
And we're back, New Sky Radio, Para X Network. It is Hot Leads Cold Cases with your host, Nancy Duterte. Now, make sure you find her away from the show, theskepticalpsychic.com. Joined tonight by our guest, Stanton Friedman. And if you want to give us a call with a question or comment, like we're about to address a caller in just a moment, 248-545-7685, 248-545-SOUL, instant feedback. That's at newskyradio.com. And, of course, you have the chat room over at Para X. So with that, we'll send it back over to Nancy and Stanton.
All right. Brandon, we have a caller on the line?
We do. We have Lee from New York. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Hi. How are you all doing tonight?
Good, Lee. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Nancy, I actually know Mr. Friedman, and I have talked with him many times over many decades.
Oh.
And there's a question that I've actually never asked him about, so perhaps he can take a minute tonight to address this.
Sure.
The whole controversy about UFOs coming from other planets, and the reason why scientists don't go for that idea is because they're always claiming they can't get here from there. They'd have to use up too many resources, too many years, not enough gasoline to do the trick. And I often wonder, why is it that everybody assumes that they need to do something the way we would try and do something? If any civilization that might even only be 500 years or 1,000 years, a little more technologically advanced than we are, maybe they've figured out a way to travel around the galaxy that we can't even conceive of. Physicists these days are talking about other realities that are close by us, other dimensions that perhaps these UFOs could be slipping into and out of very easily. But science doesn't want to think about that in general because since we can't do it, so therefore nobody else can. And I'd like to know what Stan thinks about that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I think it's a convenient excuse for people, theoretical physicists in particular, and science fiction writers, not to do their homework about what we do know and what we are able to do if we could spend the money. In other words, fourth-dimensional space-time warping, wormholes, all these sorts of things. I'm not saying they're impossible, but the history of science over the last couple of hundred years, and I've got a whole book about this, as you know, science was wrong, but all the smart people who said stupid things like, we'll never fly in an airplane for any distance, that was 2 months before the Wright brothers' first flight, and space travel is utter bilge, one guy said. My mantra is progress comes from doing things differently in an unpredictable way. The future is not an extrapolation of the past. There's no reason to expect aliens to be limited to our technology. I mean, I don't use the slide rule anymore. I hope everybody knows what the slide rule is. You know.
Yes.
I don't use a vacuum tube radio anymore. There are better ways of doing things. And I understand they're going to stop, they're going to outlaw the selling of the conventional light bulbs pretty soon because they use too much energy. They're going to use different kinds. So I'm not saying you can't warp space and time, but it isn't necessary. With a fusion rocket, you can kick particles out the back end that have 10 million times as much energy per particle as they can get in a dumb old chemical rocket. 10 million is a pretty big multiplier. And so... would it be cheap? No. And I'm not saying we should do this. Lord knows we got better ways to spend our money here on this planet, like feeding a few starving children and stuff like that. But I won't rule out the far-out stuff. Also, I should add that because a related question is, well, Stan, you're telling me a spaceship from another solar system could get here and then would crash in Roswell? No, I'm not telling you that. I'm saying there's a mothership. And a little Earth excursion module. We have the perfect analog. The nuclear navy has huge, and they are pretty darn big, aircraft carriers that are nuclear powered. They can operate for 18 years without refueling. They carry a bunch of little fighter planes that can operate for 2 hours without refueling. They're not the same. They're not using the same technology. You don't need to go near the speed of light when you're around the planet. How do you meet somebody for lunch when it takes a seventh of a second to go around the planet? I mean, you know, it's pretty silly. So I won't rule out the esoteric, but I think we have to go through the technological before we jump to the esoteric.
And I think also it's really hard for people, you know, if you take somebody who's interested in buying a house, you take them to a really dumpy house and you say, oh, but if you just fix this up, put a little fresh paint and you do this, that, most people have a real hard time imagining what it would look like. So yeah. I think that may contribute to the, you know, the ridicule factor, the disbelief factor. When I interviewed Seth Shostak from SETI on this show a while back, I asked him because, you know, the whole purpose of SETI is to pick up communications from alien intelligences, but they're looking for radio frequencies. And I asked him, I mean, I said, do you think it's reasonable to assume aliens would be using radio frequencies to communicate across galaxies or mega galaxies or whatever? And you're only able to pick up a particular wavelength range of between 10 meters and a millimeter. And he said, it's possible we might miss some, but the aliens would probably figure out that we wouldn't be able to pick anything up, you know, lower than that range because of the humidity in our atmosphere. It seemed like a very convoluted reason to imagine what aliens would be thinking in order to send out radio frequencies, which is what we think of, you know, on a more conventional level. Do you think they communicate some other way?
Well, I think they communicate by traveling. I mean, I've gone down to Australia to lecture and stuff twice. It would have been a lot cheaper, I suppose, to use a telephone or send an internet signal or whatever. But I was there in person. I think aliens, we have, you know, the contrast here is remarkable. We have an enormous amount of evidence in the form of sighting reports, radar visual cases, physical trace cases, etc., that aliens are visiting. Do we have any evidence that aliens are sending us radio signals at any frequency? The answer is no. They have not picked up one signal. As a matter of fact, Seth said about the Betty and Barney Hill case. I did the work on the star map. At least I published the first paper about the star map there, which tells us that the base stars are Zeta 1 and Zeta 2 Reticuli. They're just down the street. 39 light years away, which isn't very far as these things go. And he said, well, we listened to those stars and we didn't get a signal back, so I guess there's nobody there. They haven't gotten a signal back from any place. Why would people send signals using an old, old technique? The first long-distance radio signal on Earth was in 1901. Marconi up in Newfoundland picked it up from England. 1901, that's, 113 years ago. That's an absurdly small percentage of the lifespan of a civilization. I mean, I don't know what ours is going to be. Who knows how long we're going to be able to manage to last. But, in other words, stuck at that level makes no sense at all. And what kind of an argument to say, we didn't get a signal there, so there's nobody there, when they haven't gotten a signal from anywhere? And they have provided no evidence whatsoever of any kind that there is anybody sending signals using any kind of radio technology. It makes work for radio astronomers. It's interesting. There was just a panel December the 4th, astrobiology, a congressional hearing. Three people testified. Interesting papers. They're on the Internet. Nobody mentioned sending radio signals, for one thing, and nobody mentioned UFO data. But what they're going to do, honest to God, this is what they're going to do, is study the atmospheres around planets that, because of Kepler, we have a good reason to think that they're in the right zone, the habitable zone of that star, and see what the composition of the atmosphere is, because that might tell us whether there's some kind of life there. Because the atmospheric compositions are dependent on plants growing and stuff like that. Not one word about all the data that says anybody's coming here. They're not plants. I mean, even if there is oxygen in the atmosphere, that doesn't mean the life is still there after all. So I find this extraordinary. You know, I'm reminded of that cartoon. The cop is looking at the drunk who's on the ground underneath the streetlight. What are you doing down there? I'm looking for my keys. Where'd you lose them? Well, over by that car over there. Well, why are you looking here? There's more light here. That makes no sense to me.
Yes, I agree.
I can't do a good cartoon on radio. I'm sorry.
No, no, that was good. I got it. That was cute. Now, I have a bunch of questions I want to ask you about MJ-12, which I think everybody is kind of fascinated by. And, I mean, you wrote a terrific book on it. And I think, you know what? We got to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to rush you through a bunch of questions on it, all right?
And I'll talk fast.
Oh, that's good. Okay. Stay with us, everybody. You're listening to Hot Leads Cold Cases. My guest tonight is Stanton Friedman.
At Talent, our family treasure, we create dolls, jewelry, eggs, and decorations. We believe in beauty and kindness beyond measure. At Talent, our family treasure. Shop at talentoft.com. Or find us on Amazon.com at Talent, our family treasure.
New Sky Radio. NewSkyRadio.com and Psychic Radio, PsychicOnAir.com. Powered by CBS Radio, AOL, and Yahoo is unlike any talk radio station. With a mission to improve the world, one listener at a time. This is where you can be the star of your own show. Our listeners are truly unique, truly interactive, and passionate about their world. The Sky and Psychic Radio listeners genuinely care about the environment, social justice, their personal health, and raising people up to live their best life every day. Our motto is New Horizons, No Boundaries. New Age views, life coaching, psychic analysis, alternative medicine, and cutting-edge mind, body, and spirit shows can all be found on The Sky and Psychic Radio. Perhaps you have what it takes to join our broadcast family. An open mind, a great idea, and a passion for enriching lives. Check out all the exciting details by clicking the microphone on our homepage at newskyradio.com or give Lisa Rodman a call at 248-546-9600 to learn just how affordable it can be to host a show.
Are you having trouble with stubborn weight and belly fat? Do you feel like you're not in charge of your body? Do cravings overwhelm you? Dr. Doug Lehr can help. 518-556-1421 or go to healthbydrdoug.com to receive your free gift. Is your body image affecting your personal relationships? Do you have self-esteem matters interfering with your success? Feel like you're not in control of your life? Dr. Doug Lehr can help. 518-556-1421 or go to healthbydrdoug.com to receive your free gift. Dr. Doug guarantees he will find the cause of your physical, mental, and emotional issues and give you a personal upgrade. Call Dr. Doug Lehr at 518-556-1421 or go to healthbydrdoug.com to receive your free gift. Do you have pain? What about inflammation? Are you plagued by allergies? Dr. Doug Lehr can help. 518-556-1421 or go to healthbydrdoug.com to receive your free gift. If you're ready to get out of survival mode and embrace greater health and happiness, call Dr. Doug Lehr for an appointment now at 518-556-1421 or go to healthbydrdoug.com to receive your free gift now.
CBS Radio's The New Sky. New horizons, no boundaries.
Back to Hot Leads and Cold Cases with Nancy Duterte.
You're hot and you're cold. Yes and you're no. You're in and you're out. You're up and you're down.
Call Nancy Duterte now.
248-545-SOUL.
And we're back, Hot Leads Cold Cases, here at The Sky and the Para-X Network. Make sure you find Nancy away from the show, theskepticalpsychic.com. And we want to thank Stanton Friedman for joining the show. I want to thank Lee from New York for calling in. 248-545-7685, instant feedback, newskyradio.com, and, of course, the Para-X chat room for a last-second question or comment for the show. Get things right back over to Nancy and Stanton.
Okay, yeah. I got some last-second questions, too.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be able to get past you, Nancy.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. I think everybody has been fascinated in recent years by this MJ-12, Majestic 12 concept, and you wrote about it extensively in your book called Top Secret Magic. And I think you did an amazing research job, and it's almost the stronger the voices of the debunkers, the fiercer you get. I mean, you studied things like typewriter fonts and whether eyes were dotted over. I mean, it just, you went into an unbelievable logical, clear research detail to verify and authenticate the very, very few documents that exist. In fact, as my understanding, there's really there's one major document, and apart from that, there isn't much. So if you can't authenticate that document, well, then it's pretty much out the door.
Right.
And so maybe you can give just some quick history. Who were the original members of MJ-12? What was the original purpose and mission?
The Majestic 12 was established in September 1947 by President Truman. This Roswell was July of 47. And the idea was to figure out what gives with flying saucers. And the document names the 12 people. That's why Magic 12. Incidentally, there will be a movie, Magic Men, if I hope they make it. At least it's been optioned from that book and another book.
Fantastic.
The 12 people included the first three directors of Central Intelligence, several generals and admirals, and half a dozen scientists, and the Secretary of Defense, James Forrestal. And everybody sounded okay, except for one Harvard professor of astronomy, and you don't need a high-level security clearance to teach astronomy at Harvard. Well, I ran across something that raised an eyebrow, so I got permission from three different people to look at his papers at Harvard and discovered, to my total surprise, because I didn't like him while he was alive, that he had a longer continuous association with the NSA. Mr. Snowden's outfit, you know? Stands for Never Says Anything, No Such Agency. Anyway, he told Jack Kennedy that when we are properly cleared to each other, I can tell you more. And there's a whole bunch more, and it's in the book. The point is, every time somebody raised an objection, I checked, I double-checked, triple-checked, and none of the objections stand up. I even made $1,000 for proving that Philip Glass was wrong when he said the type font was not used by the National Security Council in this case. And he'd pay me $100 each for every genuine item, and he had a whole bunch of kickers on it, that I could find, up to a maximum of 10. He'd never been to the Eisenhower Library. I've spent weeks there. I went there. I got 14. Made copies, sent him an invoice for $1,000, and he paid me. Told everybody about challenging me, nobody about paying me. They got 250,000 pages of National Security Council documents. He had 9 that he had gotten by mail, incidentally. He had never been there, and I checked that again, never been there. So I really went into depth in a lot of these things because the basic rule is have facts in hand before putting mouth in gear. I learned that a long time ago. And in high school debating, it was useful, too. So I get people saying, oh, there's no MJ-12, but I can't get them to give me some specific reasons why they say that. Here's the documents. What's your problem with them? Give it to me. I'll look at it. And I've been, like I said, many, I've been at 20 archives altogether, but several of them dealing with this.
What do you make of the fact that the Harvard astronomer, was Dr. Donald Menzel, I believe, he was apparently a really vicious debunker of UFOs, but then you go and discover that he apparently was actually a member of this group and that he knew that they absolutely existed and was working overtime to ensure the cover-up. What does that tell you about what's been going on? Why would they do that?
Well, I think it tells you that it's considered very important, the most classified subject in the United States, said a Canadian memo in the early 50s. And Menzel was very well fixed to do all kinds of work. He was a science fiction writer, and he wrote 3 anti-UFO books that any college freshman, senior physics major would be able to debunk. And I found somebody who knew him extremely well, and I said, how does it strike you that he would know all this stuff and he was taking the other side? He said he would have loved it. He knew he was smarter than everybody else, and this just proved that he knew stuff they didn't know. I'll take his word for it. I mean, I talked to Dr. Menzel's wife. She didn't know anything about his classified activities. But it was an all-star cast. And once Menzel fell into place, then the rest were fairly easy. He was able to show that the dates were right, that when this person met with that person. I also found there's a lot of phony MJ-12 documents out there. My goodness.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be natural to throw a lot of garbage out once the good stuff came out? And hope the garbage rubs off.
Well, and they apparently kept showing up in 35-millimeter camera film cases in people's mailboxes with no return addresses.
Well, that's right. We don't have a provenance. The guy who was breaking the law was the guy who sent the film to people without a security clearance. This is a top secret magic document. And we know that the NSA considers UFOs top secret. You can get 156 whited out NSA UFO documents on which you can read one sentence per page because everything else is whited out because of sources and methods data, they say. I've got blacked out CIA UFO documents, top secret Umbra, mind you, and you can read six words on a page. And one of them, I love one of them, says deny in toto. Not even six words could they declassify on that page. So, you know, for people who say, oh, there's no cover-up, I say, well, can you read what's under that black or under that white? Well, no. Well, then there is a cover-up, darn it. Don't tell me there isn't any.
I think you talk about your lawsuit in which it was ruled that they turn over the documents, which previously had been denied, saying they didn't exist, but then they had to turn them over. And they proved the existence of the documents, but of course you couldn't read them, which proves your point anyway.
Yes. Yes, it does. And remember, I spent 14 years under security. I'm not surprised when I can't find out something. And yeah. I was opposed to releasing everything we have because I think there is a security problem. We got technology. Unless the Russians and Chinese put theirs out on the table at the same time, why should we? Makes no sense.
Let me ask you a quick question. We have about one more minute or so. Do you believe that the Majestic 12 group has continued, and does it exist today? And if so, who do you think the members would be?
I've thought about that. I think it exists, but with a different name. Once a name has been put out in public, you have to change the name. That's the rules of security. You know, when the cover is blown, you got to go someplace else. I don't know who's on it now. It gets very complicated figuring out. I've had some ideas, former directors of Central Intelligence, for example. But there's so many people in high levels in the government in Washington that who knows who's been lurking in the background and knows everything and isn't telling anybody.
Would the mission be the same today as it was back then, or would it be different?
Yeah, I think two important things. Analysis of wreckage and all that sort of stuff, and analysis of scientific measurements of the behavior of flying saucers, what the color is when they change direction, what signals are being given off by them, all that sort of thing. It takes coordination by a very smart group of people, and it's like the wheels of an old Western wagon. No rim. The data goes in on the spokes to the central hub, and it doesn't go out to the others. There's a separation, a compartmentalization of data. How you break into that, I haven't any idea.
All right. Well, we unfortunately are out of time. If people would like to get in touch with you or find out how to purchase any of your books, or if you have anything coming up soon, how would they find out about it?
Well, they go to my website, www.stantonfriedman.com. Very easy. And it lists all the books, tells you how to order them. I autograph everything I send out. There's several articles and other information. You can have fun with it. And it lists upcoming engagements like the tour of the nuclear test site, like the Roswell meeting and the MUFON meeting, both in July in different places. Well, there's plenty going on. It's an exciting world still for us old guys.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Stan, for being on the show. I appreciate it.
My problem. My privilege.
It will never be your problem. But then again, that remains to be seen. Good night, everybody. We will see you again next week.